The Monty Show. How the heck are you? It's Tuesday, September 25th, 2018. I'm Monty. That's Jake, the insurance fraud king.
Yes.
Are you the king of insurance fraud?
No.
No, you're not. But we're going to talk about your little insurance issue. We'll get to that today on the car that's not a Ferrari. Big day of college football for you. We got to talk about the fact that this weekend could well determine the college football playoff. BYU's got Washington in shades of 1984. You weren't even boiling in the bag yet, Jake. The Pac-12 is going to keep playing late night games. Fitzmagic could be going to the bench. And some dude was spitting on pizza that he was selling in the concession stands at a baseball park. That's not good.
No.
Sorry.
Chill. It's only Tuesday. That's a Friday routine.
Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. That's kind of where you find me everywhere, whether it's Instagram or, you know, wherever you...
Snapface,
yes. Thank you. Anywhere you want to find me, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. That's also where you find us in iTunes, Google Play. You can find us just about anywhere if you search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, and TheMontyShow.com. Let's start with a little college football for you, because I think this weekend will determine, or at least will go a long way to determining the college football playoff. There's a couple of games this weekend, including Notre Dame and Stanford at Notre Dame Stadium, and Ohio State and Ohio State University at Penn State against the Nittany Lions. Hello. I love Penn State in that game. But here's a scenario that I think a lot of people need to kind of wrap their heads around, Jake.
Yeah.
What happens if Georgia and Alabama
roll tide?
What if they both go undefeated and wind up in the SEC championship game against one another? They clearly, at that point, be the two best teams in the country if Alabama and Georgia wind up undefeated in the SEC title game.
Sure.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover before then. Both teams got to go to Baton Rouge to take on LSU. They both have Auburn. And Georgia has to take on Kentucky Fried Chicken. So it's not as though they have an easy road to get there, but I think these are the two best teams in the country. If they go undefeated and then run into each other in the championship game, one of them's coming out with a loss.
Yep.
Right? That's a problem. Because I don't think Ohio State's going undefeated. Don't have to worry about them. Then there's Clemson, and I'm just like, Clemson doesn't really have anything left. I mean, you've got Syracuse this weekend. I think there's a real chance this happens. And that's why you hate to be the Pac-12 right now. Going to Notre Dame, if Stanford loses, I think the Pac-12's done in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I think if the Pac-12 loses, we've got a real problem in college football from the perspective of, like, the entire brand of college football, the entire landscape of college football, because we're only sitting here crying about, you know, two SEC teams going at each other and one getting knocked out of the postseason because the Pac-12 is not good enough. The Pac-12 isn't producing enough.
I would agree with that.
And so it's an awkward conundrum. It's weird. Like, we expect Alabama to be there, but teams like Georgia, who may not be there every single year but have been there recently, like, that's a team that should go. That's a team that should be there playing in the postseason, you know, giving us that great matchup.
But when you talk about what's good for college football, are you going to tell me that a one-loss Georgia team missing the playoffs is good for college football? Are you going to tell me that a one-loss Alabama team missing is good? Are you going to tell me that a one-loss Ohio State team is going to be more attractive to the viewer or to the college football fan than a one-loss Georgia team whose only loss is to Alabama? I think this is the conundrum. Ultimately, this is a conundrum. And again, LSU's fifth in the country is going to have quite a bit to say about this. They're 4-0. You have teams like Oklahoma, who's kind of got the meat grinder of the Big 12 coming up. Stanford, again, the last greatest hope of the Pac-12, is 4-0. Then there's Notre Dame. And this is where it really kind of gets convoluted. If you look at Notre Dame, 8th in the country, 4-0, they make a quarterback change last weekend to Ian Book, which, as a Notre Dame fan, hallelujah!
Domination.
Like, thank you.
Domination, bro.
You had Wimbush struggling to put up 20-something points a game. What would this Notre Dame team have done to a putrid Michigan club if Book had been the quarterback, to Ball State, to Vandy? Well, I could tell you put up 56 points on Wake. I think there's a real chance for Ian Book and the Notre Dame Fighting Bookers to take out Stanford, the number 7 team in the country, and legitimize themselves. And oh, by the way, then it's kind of straight downhill at Virginia Tech, Pitt, Navy, Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse. Then, of course, the rivalry game of the year is always Notre Dame and USC. That game's in Los Angeles this year. Never a gimme.
Yeah.
But that's kind of an easy road.
Yeah.
And if you're an undefeated Notre Dame team, are you more worthy than a one-loss Georgia or Alabama team? I don't think so. Not with that schedule. Because if you're a one-loss team, and again, just play the scenario that Georgia and Alabama wind up undefeated in the SEC championship game. You're going to have beat LSU. You're going to have on the road. You're going to have beat Auburn. You're going to have beat, in Georgia's case, Kentucky. Like, you're going to have beat some quality teams.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do. Now, my guess is that one of these teams screws up somewhere and loses a game that they should win and probably bails us all out.
Yeah.
But if this scenario plays out, does this accelerate the expansion of the college football playoff?
I mean, I think it needs to. We need it. We're at a point where, and again, I feel like a negative Nancy on this, but we're at a point
negative,
where...
Nathan, please.
Nathan, I apologize. My fault. Okay, okay. I just can't help but say the Pac-12 needs to get better, because if we had two or three Pac-12 teams in this discussion, if it wasn't just Stanford, if it was UW,
if it was
USC,
if it was
UCLA,
SC in Washington, living up to the hype, like look at Washington this week. Got those upstart Cougs, TDS down there in Little Provo, 20th in the country, going to number 11, mighty Pac-12. They've done all right against the Pac-12 this year.
Yeah.
You know, everything's fine.
Yep.
Probably lost to a Cal team they're better than, or should have beaten.
Yep.
At least, right? This is a road-tested team. BYU went to Wisconsin and won. Not out of this world. Now, BYU is a 17.5-point dog in this game. That's not real good.
The disrespect on that is amazing.
Oh, it's mighty.
Oh, my God.
Right? Like, it's mighty.
Dude, I like, what?
What? Yeah, but there's a chance BYU goes in there and wins. Not a good chance.
No, I see, I think I don't think it's a good chance, but I do think they've got, for them, like, in their locker room, that team knows they can beat Washington. And I think Washington knows that they have the pressure on them. You have to beat BYU. This isn't a hey, maybe we should beat you.
Maybe.
You should dominate BYU. That's the expectation.
You're bigger, you're faster, and you're stronger.
And you play in the Pac-12.
Yes. Absolutely right.
Oh, but wait. I don't feel like that means as much right now.
Not
right
now.
You play in the Pac-12.
Yeah, not right now it doesn't. And granted, Washington is the 11th team in the country, and you know, if you're the Utah Utes, you feel like they should be much lower than that, because let's be honest, Utah probably should have won that game if they could, I don't know, score points. They would have won that game, and they should have won that game. By the way, the Utes in Pullman at Washington State this weekend, as Kyle Whittingham said the other day, with the sun out, who knew that that was a thing? We'll talk about that in a while. Anyway, my guess this weekend is we're going to lose Stanford, and I think we're going to lose Ohio State from this conversation.
I don't know. I understand where you're coming from with the Stanford thing, but that win against Oregon was legit. Like, that was a, hey, we came out, we were behind, we came from behind, and then we beat you in overtime.
Right, but you had to go to Eugene and beat Oregon on the road in overtime, and now you're going to turn around and go to South Bend and do it again?
I think you're on a high after that win.
No.
There's no.
No,
I think
no,
they
no,
are.
No,
they were never supposed to win. They were never in that game. They weren't in that game till late in the second half.
First of all, Stanford's way better than Oregon.
Well, they weren't that day.
Sure. But you go to, you, I'm telling you, man, you go to Eugene. Oregon's a good team at home. I don't care what year it is or who their coach is. That's a tough place to go and win. My point in saying that is I'm a firm believer that it's tough to turn that trick twice, to beat two pretty good teams. And I think Notre Dame is probably twice as good as Oregon right now, just based on their defense and the way that they're running the football. And now if Ian Book's able to go out there and throw the football the way he did. Now, Stanford's a different animal. Stanford's much better. Now, has Notre Dame seen anybody that can run the football? No. Not the way that kid can run the football. But it's really difficult to do that 2 weeks in a row. And Bryce Love or no Bryce Love, you don't go to Notre Dame after going to Eugene and just expect to have a walk in the park.
That's not what I said. I'm just saying that I think it's going to be a fight, and I think they've got a good chance of winning that game.
Well, I think they both have a good chance of winning that game. But I also look at Stanford and say, hey, by the way, then you got to go home and play a well-rested Utah team.
That's the one where I have concern.
And then you're at ASU. I think it doesn't matter if Stanford wins this game or not, because they're not running the table on that schedule.
No.
That's not going to happen. That's why I said, if you are college football, if you're the people, if you are the Death Star NCAA, you are rooting for Notre Dame this weekend, and I think you're rooting for Penn State. And I know that James Franklin's a guy who loves being a home underdog. 2-0 is a home underdog. Last time, 2016, against an Ohio State University. You won that game. And this week, Ohio State's a 3.5-point favorite. Why? I have no idea. Because I don't know if anybody's noticed. Well, because nobody knows. Starting running back for Penn State is...
Hello.
Miles Sanders. 7 yards per carry. 7 yards a carry. He's putting up better numbers at this point in his career than Saquon was. So it's not like you don't miss Saquon Barkley, because there's no way not to. But boy, they have a pretty good kid in the backfield right now. I think you want the brand of Ohio State to win this game, but the story of Penn State to win this game, if you're the NCAA. In any way this works out, and again, I know, what are we, week 5 of the college football season? I get it. I'm probably way ahead of this. This is a huge elimination weekend in the college football playoffs. There's no way to get around that. And when you look at the Pac-12, strictly the Pac-12, boy, howdy, I don't know what to make heads or tails of this, because the South is far from done. We haven't even really begun playing in the South yet, right? Like, we haven't seen the biggest matchups. When we start seeing, what is USC? By the way, this really pissed me off as well. I think it was John Wilner in the hotline had it. Pac-12 officials went back and reviewed the targeting non-call at USC. Not targeting. But wait, he put the crown of his helmet in the side of his face. No, that's not targeting. Like, I don't understand. Yeah, and that's exactly what I tweeted last week. I don't understand. And I'm not a college football official or an NFL official. I get it. I don't understand how this is not targeting. I don't understand how our Pac-12 officials... this bad every single year. And then to have Larry Scott, who we're also going to rip, I mean, talk about in a minute.
Hello.
How on earth are you going to again have the commissioner of the Pac-12 say, no, that wasn't, that wasn't targeting. I don't understand what targeting is anymore. And we clearly have seen this in the NFL, the Clay Matthews stuff. I think the NFL is going to not reverse that rule, but I think they're going to have to put out some kind of clarification so guys have an understanding of exactly what it is that they have to do.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody knows right now. Honestly and truly, I don't think anybody has a clue about what is and what is not targeting. And Porter Gustin's hit, that was targeting. Sorry, yeah. Porter. He put his face into the side of that guy's helmet last week. Who was Washington State?
Yeah.
I mean, the crown of your helmet is in the side of that guy's face. That's targeting.
It's targeting.
Plain and simple. They don't call it. And then the Pac-12 comes out and says, oh, no, that's not targeting. We reviewed it afterward.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't get it. Who's the best team in the Pac-12 right now? I got to nail your... You think it's Stanford?
Yeah.
Is Stanford better than Washington?
Right now they are, yeah. I do think they are. I was impressed with Costello. I was impressed with that performance at Oregon.
How could you not be?
I mean, he led them, man. Like, he did what you need your quarterback to do.
Which, by the way, I told you he would.
Okay. It's Tuesday. Chill.
I'm just saying, somebody's hot picking games. I'm dominating college football right now. Just so, on the season through 4 weeks, I am 10 of 13. That would mean I've missed three games all season long.
Boy, you were like, really good in math class.
I don't like to brag. Well, my shoes are off, so I can count a little higher.
Oh, okay.
The point is, I liked a lot what Stanford was doing. I truly look at their offense now, and I see a little more balance. Now, KJ Costello doesn't turn the football over, and I really like that. I like the fact that he doesn't have to be this running quarterback
He's composed.
To win. Yeah, and he... Composed is probably the same way of saying I didn't see him panic one time. And Justin Herbert, I like Justin Herbert. He's, you know, as Oregon quarterbacks go, he's a little different than what we're used to seeing in those putrid, awful uniforms that Nike provides them. But he's not an elite quarterback. In my opinion, anyway, if that team runs the ball well, usually Oregon wins. If they don't, I don't think he's good enough to carry him. And the other thing I thought really stood out in that game is that Stanford's defense loves getting after the quarterback. Jordan Fox is a good football player.
Yep.
That's what really stood out to me in that game. I really like Stanford, and I'm torn. And I know that this is really almost a foolish thing to say as we talk about the Pac-12. I still can find a way to say that Washington's the best team in that conference. I know. Why are you shaking
your head? I would just disagree on it. And I think, you know, earlier in the show we talked about this matchup between Stanford and Notre Dame. And one thing I really pointed out with that Stanford-Oregon matchup at the end of the game, Stanford, we're still in regulation. They got a field goal to win the game. Oregon comes out in formation on the field goal with 12 guys on the field. And all I have to say is Notre Dame wouldn't make that mistake, I don't think. And so that's going to be the biggest difference when we talk about can Stanford go there and win.
Yeah.
I don't think Notre Dame is going to make those stupid mistakes. I think you're going to have everything Costello can give you. Love is really going to have to dominate, and that defense is going to have to continue.
I'm curious if Ian Book can score. Can he score 35 points against Stanford's defense? Can the Notre Dame offense with Ian Book at quarterback put up 35 points? Because I think that's the number they will have to score. Because I think Stanford's offense can play with anybody.
Yeah.
I think they're that good. I still maintain that Washington, and I think BYU is going to be a hell of a test for Washington this weekend. I think there's so much on the line credibility-wise, momentum-wise, riding a great wave.
Yes.
If BYU wins this game, can you imagine that? They're ranked 20th now. Are they 15th in the country if they go to Wisconsin and to Washington and win both of those games on the road? Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, right? I think there's no question. We'll do our locks on Friday. I'm 10 of 13 locking games this year in college football. I don't know if I've mentioned that. Anyway, we'll do our locks on the show Friday. The number's 17.5, and I'll just tell you right now, there's not a chance in the world Washington covers that number.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even the discussion. You're exactly right. BYU will make this a close game. But I find myself questioning this, us saying that Washington's going to win this game. And the only reason I'm questioning that is because BYU went to Wisconsin and won in a game they had no business winning, in a game where we said, no, the size is going to overpower them. No, you know, it's Wisconsin. Like, you know, Jonathan Taylor, like, they got all this stuff, and they go and get it done. And so I just wonder, if you can go to Washington and do this, what does that do to the rest of your season? What does that do for Kalani? Because, again, I want to revert back. We said before the Washington game, this is a signature game for Kalani. They go and win this game. This is a different team. Now this is Kalani's team. Now this is his stamp. If they go to Wisconsin, then they go to Washington. I mean, you can't measure how good that feels.
Yeah, I also, by the way, think it's going to be all about Tanner Mangum getting away from that Washington defense. It was a little surprising that they didn't sack Manny Wilkins one time. Not even one time in the ASU game. I think that was a little surprising. That's not downgrading that defense. It was just a little surprising that a guy like Ben Burkervin has a massive game that does not include a tackle for loss or a sack.
Impressive.
And they found a way to pull that game out late. Like, ASU was in that game. And I don't know why, and maybe I'm just drinking the blue Kool-Aid, Monty.
Uncle Monty on a Tuesday.
Drinking the blue Kool-Aid. I think that this is going to be a very close game. And it will all come down to how many times Tanner Mangum turns the ball over.
Yep.
It really is that simple. I do want to talk a little more Pac-12. And obviously, we'll have a lot more on college football coming up Thursday and Friday as we really get into the schedule. But this Pac-12 thing is infuriating. The Pac-12, Larry Scott today came out and said, oh, yeah, we love those late-night games. They're going to keep happening. Those late kickoffs, well, they're not going anywhere, friends. And I just want to try and understand this because I don't get it.
Yeah.
And if you didn't hear this today, Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott essentially said, we give ABC, ESPN, and Fox high-quality program in a late-night window that does business. He's making these statements because of that Stanford-Oregon game that drew 4.26 million viewers on ABC. And as Jake runs his face into the microphone.
Hello.
Watch out that microphone right there. ESPN and Fox have a 12-year, $3 billion deal with the Pac-12 that runs through 24-25. I get it. It's money that you need. But these late kickoffs are a real problem. And I thought that the Oregon media did a great job with this. There were stories on Monday. What's today? Tuesday? Yeah, Monday. Yesterday, I was reading stories about how Oregon season ticket holders are at a breaking point. Because these late kickoffs, and this was 7:30. Okay? They had stories about how Eugene is 2 hours from Portland. So on a game day, it's 3.5, almost 4 hours to drive from Portland to Eugene because of the crowd. Because Eugene's not the biggest, you know, Autzen's in a very small, compact area. It's almost 4 hours to commute to the game. Then the game kicks off at 7:30. It's on ABC. The game is long. You're probably not rolling out of there until close to 11:30 midnight. And it's going to take you 3 hours to get home. That's 3 a.m. on a Saturday night. Like, it is a pilgrimage of sorts to go to a college football game.
Yeah.
It's not L.A. You know, and then, and I think it was Oregon Live that had this story. Season ticket holders were one thing, but alumni, Oregon's got a vast network of alumni. And a lot of them are on the East Coast, New York, Tampa, apparently tons in Florida. Well, that's a 10:30 kickoff for them. And if it's a three-hour game, now you're into the wee hours. You're into like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning before the game's even over. So I get that you're desperate for this revenue because how poorly the Pac-12 network has gone, and you needed a primetime slot because you're not, frankly, quality enough to earn that, to you know, to really push your product to the next level. And I think it's this vicious cycle. Do you hate late kickoffs in the Pac-12?
Yes.
Is there anybody who likes them?
No.
And I don't know how to fix it. And I think this is the real question about the Pac-12. Do you see a scenario where the Pac-12 can become the best athletic conference in the country?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. No doubt about it.
How does that happen?
In my opinion, I think you got to bite the bullet here. You've got to get out of this deal, and you've got to get out ahead and get into streaming. You've got to get younger. You've got to, mentality-wise, you got to get younger. It's not just about ESPN. Like, yeah, that's a nice formula, and, like, that's a nice, you know, just, like, a nice segue to get money. But But you got to get to YouTube. You got to get to social media and get to your actual base of people who want to watch these games. And I think if you do that, you will see that you will be able to start earlier games. You'll get better talent because more people are
sure.
seeing.
I don't think it's a matter of getting out of this deal. I think it's a matter of living through this deal and finding a way to get your game more widely distributed. The Pac-12 network has to have the same carriage and distribution that the Big Ten network has. That's the ideal model. Why do you think the Big Ten network really pushed to get themselves carried on East Coast cable networks? Because all kinds of viewership, sure, recruiting is a huge part of that. Without DirecTV, you can't deliver the southeast part of the country. You can't even be seen in most of the Pac-12 territory. I have DirecTV. I don't get the Pac-12 network. And the streaming stuff, all that, it's a huge problem. So I don't see them becoming the best conference, athletic conference in the country, because I don't believe that they will ever attract the best talent across the board. You may get that in other sports, non-rev sports like baseball or, you know, not to be a jerk, but soccer and female ladies soccer, women's basketball. Like, you may get it in non-revenue generating sports. You will never have the best athletes in the country in the Pac-12 to play football.
But I think you have everything you need. Like, USC has everything it needs to get the best talent, right? Like, it's got location, it's got the swag, it's got the lifestyle. Like, it's got everything it needs. It's got everything that Alabama has. Only it just doesn't have that power, right? It doesn't have the intangible power that Alabama has right now. And I don't know how you fix that other than to just say you've got to find a way to get, in my opinion, it's all about, like, YouTube's a great example, and I know we always go to it, and there's a reason for it. If you can just make the Pac-12 network on YouTube, make it $10 a month.
Like, it's distribution. You have to put more eyes. You have to be able to tell best linebacker in the country, hey, your mom's going to be able to see every single game on her phone, on her tablet. Well, she doesn't have TV. Well, that's okay. She can watch on her phone.
That's great. You got her the new iPhone, right?
It's distribution.
That's it.
Here's a USC logo iPhone.
Yeah.
Here's a Ute logo iPhone. Tell your mom that the app's already loaded. She can just open this app and watch the game.
That's what I'm saying. You don't need to have a big TV and like have DirecTV and have the hookup and all that. All you need to have is internet and a smartphone. That's it.
Yeah, I think it's a huge problem. And I think Larry Scott, again, he's the highest paid commissioner in all of college football, of college athletics. I think he is wearing a mask and a gun to work every day.
And it's convenient that he's the highest paid commissioner and he's doing what's going to make them the most money right now instead of long term.
Yeah, it's remarkable how much the Pac-12 is struggling.
Yeah.
And it's not USC that's going to get hurt. It's Washington State, Utah. It's the smaller schools who will never see the light of day.
Yep.
And Utah is going to have to win big games. Utah will have to play USC. Utah will have to, even like the Arizona schools, like Arizona is not a major draw on television. Arizona State's a huge draw. So you have to win those highlight games. But your game, Arizona State, will never be USC, UCLA.
Nope.
It'll never be that because you're never going to have the distribution. You're never going to have the fan base. You're just not. And that's a byproduct of a really, really average commissioner and Larry Scott. Speaking of really average, Jameis Winston's back in the news. Let's get a couple NFL headlines here on The Monty Show. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. You know, Fitzmagic. By the way, congratulations, everybody.
Hey, man.
Everybody.
Hey, man. No, it's the golf clap.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Congratulations. Jake actually won a fantasy football game.
Hey, man, I broke the ice. Everybody wants to trade now that I won.
Really?
Yeah.
So what kind of trades have you been getting?
Well, actually, today I traded Galladay for a receiver and a running back.
What did you get? You didn't even tell me about this.
No, I can't remember his name. From Jacksonville, the wide receiver from Jacksonville. In a running back. Not any huge name.
Tell me what you got here. Gee, like, see, why are you holding out on me? I don't understand why you would be holding out on me like this. So Jake has struggled. Week one, you scored the second most points in the league and would have beat every other team but the team you were playing. And then in week two, you played the team that had the highest scoring player in the league and lost by a couple of points. And then finally here in week three, you win a game, which is exciting. So, Jake, what trade did you make?
So I traded for Keelan Cole and and Javoris Allen for
Wow. I told you not to get Buck Allen. Why would you?
Because Cohen's not doing anything for me.
Good.
Doing nothing. What,
don't tell me you gave up Keenan Allen.
No, I didn't.
What did you give up?
I gave up Galladay.
Oh, my God.
I stockpiled on receivers, bro.
Dude, what is Buck Allen going to do for you?
More than Cohen has done.
Oh, my God. Dude, he's not, though. That's the problem. Like, well,
either way, I'm not suffering on this because I've got all my tools still in the bag. Galladay's been sitting on the bench rotting away.
Yeah, but he's a valuable commodity.
He's not valuable enough to pull anything else besides bench players. Like,
I don't love that.
Here's my lineup, because for people who don't know, here's my lineup: Kirk Cousins, Ian Crawwell, Latavius Murray, Keenan Allen, Mike Evans, Kyle Rudolph, Jarvis Landry, the Rams D, and Jake Elliott.
You need running back help.
Well, I'm not going to get it unless I give up receivers.
And you didn't get it. You didn't get it here.
But I also didn't give up anything. You're making a big deal out of this trade. It's not like I gave up some great value. The guy's putting up 10 points a game.
Yeah. I'm not saying that you gave up some huge thing. All I'm saying is that there are better players on the waiver wire than Buck Allen.
Okay, well, you can find it for me because I looked and there's not.
He just isn't. Listen, I looked.
I looked extensively. I spent a half hour looking at. You know, if there's a better option at running back, somebody who gets more touches, because it's PPR, you need touches. So there's really not, because everybody in this league that I'm in went heavy, heavy, heavy running back in the draft.
So I'm just asking you,
Why?
What did you see in him? Because he on the season.
I didn't see anything in him. I made the trade for Keelan Cole because I think Keelan Cole it has the ability to put up a big game, which is what he did against New England for the Jags. 7 receptions, 116 yards, and a TD for 24.6 points.
Yeah. You have outstanding receivers.
I know.
Then why do you freaking need the guy? Oh, my God. Like, I just want to choke you. I want to reach through this screen and choke you. Okay. There's no value in that trade for you.
I just said what the value was.
You got a receiver when you have 3 of the best receivers in fantasy. Mike Evans is having a huge year. Juice Landry is hot and
he's
cold.
He's going to be good.
But now with
Baker,
yeah, you can start him every week.
That's
Deshaun Jackson's hit or miss.
My point here is I'm not going to be able to give up Kenny Galladay for anybody of value. For Carlos Hyde is not an option. I tried for Howard.
I would have traded Juice Landry.
No.
Okay.
Because here's why. The reason I didn't trade Juice is because I'm going to need to put somebody in when Tampa goes on bye.
I get that. You can pick up we're talking fantasy football on the Monty Show. You're so lost on fantasy. Like, and I'm not trying to be a dick about this. That trade was a waste. Like, you gave away a guy that's a deep ball threat, and you got nothing in return. Like, I mean, you got depth wide receiver in return, which is, hey, that's cool. But you didn't need depth wide receiver. You needed running back. You made a trade for a running back who I think he's probably got 3-4 points the entire year. Like, he gets no touches. He's not even a factor. I'm just saying. You need a big-time running back. Crowell is nice because he got you 2 scores on last Thursday.
And it's not true that he doesn't put up any points. He's put up 14, 15, and 17. So he's putting up points.
Okay. Buck, like, Allen.
Yes.
It's Buck. His name's Buck.
4 attempts, 17 yards, and a TD for 14 points. 6 attempts, 8 yards, 1 TD, 15 points. 6 attempts, 7 yards, 1 TD. He's a goal line back.
Yeah.
And he puts up points. And he's putting up more points than Cohen does because, frankly, nobody wants to use Cohen because he's just not very good.
Yeah. Hey, I'm good with it.
You're not, though.
All I'm saying is you didn't help yourself. Can we stop fighting over this and fight over Jameis Winston instead?
Sure.
You don't ever take advice on fantasy football. Like, you do the exact opposite of what I tell you to do.
I tried every trade you wanted me to do, and they said no.
Juice Landry. You need to give quality to get quality. If you had an every down running back If you add Howard from Chicago, you'd win the league. You'd win the league. You'd be the best team in the league. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's talk about Fitzmagic versus Krabby Jameis. Jameis Winston is back. And now all of a sudden, after you had everybody raving about Fitzmagic, Tampa loses. And valiantly loses. I'll give them that. But they still lost. And all of a sudden now, Tampa wants to go back and start Jameis Winston. Even though they're number one in the NFC South. Even though you have a guy that's thrown for 1,230 yards and you lost 30-27. They want to start Jameis Winston. Jake, what would you do?
I would keep Fitzmagic in there. I think this is the reason Tampa's not good for consistent stretches. They just don't make good decisions. Jameis Winston has done nothing to earn that starting spot. And this is one of those things we always talk about in sports, whether we're in the draft or we're in, you know, this kind of a situation, or we're talking about having a guy getting TJ. Like, you've got to do...
having a guy getting TJ.
Like, you've got to do what's best for the organization.
Shohei Ohtani.
Dude, Jameis Winston is not best for that organization. He's not Baker Mayfield. He's not... I wouldn't even say that he's earned the right to be one of the best young quarterbacks in the game.
How many yards do you think Fitzmagic had last night?
10?
Ryan Fitzpatrick had 10 yards. No, he had 411 yards. What are you talking about? 411 yards and 3 touchdowns. He also threw 3 interceptions, but 2 were tips, so I give him a little credit for that. He threw for 392. They ran for 63. And he had guys dropping touchdowns. Like, Tampa was not a Fitzmagic problem last night. It was a wide receiver problem last night. If you bench this cat, I think you're crazy. He's already put up numbers this year that are way better than anything Jameis Winston could have ever hoped for. He's having, I mean, if there is a better career year that Ryan Fitzpatrick has had, I haven't seen it. He's averaging 11 yards of completion. He's throwing the deep ball exceptionally well. He's completing 70% of his passes. 11 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 3 of which came in one game. Why would you bench this guy?
Because you're Tampa, and Jameis is your young guy, and he's going to be a franchise player who's never going to be a franchise player.
If it were me, I would make them compete every single week, and I wouldn't bench Fitzmagic until he had, like, a terrible game.
I wouldn't. If it were me, I wouldn't even have them competing. Fitzmagic is my number one because he's earned that, and that's sending a message to Jameis Winston. You cannot have issues off the field. The suspension, that's great. You are always going to serve that. But what really sends a message to guys is, hey, because he's going to come back and he's going to be like, yeah, I served my suspension. Like, I've done my time. It's my turn to come back. No, it's not. You got to earn your time. And they're not going to do that. They're going to give it right back.
Dirk Koetter said today that he's not going to name a starting quarterback. And I'm amazed by
otherwise this. Otherwise known as I'm going to start Jameis.
Yeah, because they're going to Chicago. Then they're at Atlanta. The Browns at Cincinnati, at Carolina, and then the Redskins through mid-November. Like, that is a hellacious schedule. I don't know why you wouldn't want Fitzpatrick, because all those teams can be beat deep. I guarantee you, as a fan of the Chicago Bears, Khalil Mack is the greatest thing since sliced pass rushers. We can't cover you. Like, you can throw the ball deep on the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
So Jameis Winston doesn't throw a great deep ball. Fitzmagic does. We've seen that. Like, Deshaun's going to have a career against the Bears. The secondary in Atlanta is banged up. Cleveland, that's the one thing they do really well. They're actually pretty good on defense. I don't know if anybody's noticed that. I don't know why you would make this change. It is head-scratching why you would make this change.
Yep.
You know what I'm really looking forward to tomorrow? Tomorrow's Wednesday on the show, which means power rankings. Top 5, bottom 5. I cannot wait. Because I was doing a little digging on the Vikings today. I think the Vikings, I don't know that I can put them top 10.
Okay.
I was.
I can't. I just simply can't. I'm sorry.
What?
You can't put them top 10, really?
Oh, it's close. Dude, it is really close. Like, I'm.
So who's the 10th best team in the league that would kick the Vikings out?
Well, you know, the Bears being the number one team in the NFL has really kind of thrown me for a loop.
Sure, yeah.
Just kidding. I'm looking at, here's a serious, legitimate question for you. If the Vikings and Jaguars went head-to-head today, who's going to win that game?
The Vikings.
No, they would not. Because I'm telling you, Blake Bortles is playing really good football. Not spectacular football. Blake Bortles is playing really good football. He's getting decent protection, and that defense has come to go to work every single day. Like, that Jaguar defense is better than we thought. I would take the Saints over the Vikings. That's one. The Jags are two. The Eagles are three. I think the Dolphins, the Rams, and the Chiefs are 4, 5, and 6. And if I really start taking a deep dive on teams like Atlanta or Minnesota?
You know who I'm going to take.
You're going to take Minnesota. What about the Los Angeles, nobody wants you, Chargers? I got to take the Chargers over the Vikings, right? Don't you have to? I think you have to. The Chargers have played pretty well.
Yeah, they have. I'm not saying these teams haven't played well, but I think we need to be careful saying the Vikings are on a top 10 team in this league.
After last night, the Pittsburgh Steelers, if they
there's
do it
no
again,
chance.
If they do it again next week,
dude, that's
and the Vikings,
not...
if they do it again next week, and the Vikings go to LA and get crushed, which I'm not sure that's going to happen because Tlaib had surgery today. They're saying Marcus Peters with this calf thing may well play on Thursday night. Who knows? If they go to LA and get crushed and the Steelers win, I'm taking the Steelers. After what I saw out of that offense last night and Bud Dupree finally showed up and whooped ass.
But they did nothing in the second half. Like, right. That was a first half performance. That's it.
Right, but they won the game. And I don't think that was a first half performance. I think that secondary didn't have a great second half. Those linebackers and that defensive line.
Look, they may have got the 30 points, but there's no way that should have been a close game.
Bears or Vikings?
The Vikings.
But isn't it close?
No, I don't think it is.
It's not
the
close.
Bears' offense is nowhere near.
Better defense.
Oh, I think the Bears have a better line for sure, but I think the secondary is very questionable.
It is. They're very even. Who's got a better running back?
I think Dalvin's better.
No, come on. Then Howard? No. No chance. Howard has been, I think, freaking awesome. You have better receivers and a much better quarterback. You have a better offensive line in Chicago and a better running back in Chicago. And I think...
But how much does Trubisky hurt? I mean...
Oh, man. It's significant. That's the only... If you... Dude,
but
if
like
you...
Trubisky and the corners, though. I get that. Amukamara made that play, but...
He's hurt. Amukamara is not playing right now, and I don't know what his status is for this coming week, but he's hurt right now.
Listen, for me, the Bears and the Vikings are not that close.
But it's Packers?
I think...
Packers?
That's week to week. It depends on where Rodgers is at.
I think there's a good chance Aaron Rodgers is going to miss a month here. He looked...
He was hobbling around.
He looked terrible in Washington. Now it was a wet track. He got knocked around a little bit. Like, it was a gnarly kind of game. I think there's some real credence to Aaron Rodgers not playing a lot of football coming up the next month. You know, I'm sure by the time Halloween rolls around, he'll be back. But I think there's a lot of questions to be asked. Anyway, my point is, it's not a slam dunk that the Vikings are one of the 10 best teams in the NFL right now. Thursday night is a huge freaking game for them. It's win or be dead. Because if they lose in L.A., I mean, now you're looking at... Because, again, I'm just going to tell you, I think the Falcons are better right now today. I think the Falcons are better. I think the Saints are a much better team to them. I look at some of the teams at the bottom of this league. Okay, sure, we're not talking about the... Who's the worst team in football? The Arizona Cardinals are not better than the Vikings. But I'm going to take the Rams, the Chiefs, the Dolphins, the Bengals... The Eagles, the Ravens. That's six right there who are better. Just saying.
Jabor Allen's not a good pickup.
He's
Buck
not.
Allen, no, not a good pickup.
He's not.
Even though that offense is better. That team's better.
The Ravens? Ravens are playing decent football.
I'm just telling you. The stats right now can tell you that they may be outside the top 10, but let's see where Cincinnati's at. Let's see where the Dolphins are at come week 10.
You're also a guy who says that Andy Dalton is going to...
I don't believe in Tannehill. I don't believe in Dalton.
But week four.
It's week four.
Tannehill's played really good football, and they're 3-0, and that's no accident. That's no accident that they're 3-0. They've played really good football.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, look,
I'm not taking it as you're saying I'm wrong. I'm just telling you these teams won't be here.
Right, but they got smoked by the Bills. I'm not saying the Bills are better than the Vikings. But right now, it's very clear that this Griffin situation is a lot worse and more impactful than anybody's making it out to be on that locker room. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons to think that there's a bunch of stuff going on behind the scenes that is impacting them on the field.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Now, if they leave that behind and go out and beat the Rams, okay, well, I'm an idiot. Somehow I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, I think it's a stretch to say they beat the Rams in L.A., but I think it's close. It's not going to be a blowout. If it's a blowout, okay, then you'll change my mind on this. If the Rams go in there and just whoop ass, then my mind will be changed.
Spitting on pizza or car insurance?
They're both equally despicable.
All right, let's start with spitting on pizza. Boy, you are in a mood right now.
Yeah, I hate car insurance.
So should we talk about car insurance? Okay, Jake's got a car that's not a Ferrari. How do you feel about that?
It's true.
It is a Fiat 500 Abarth, and I own one as well, by the way. Love the car. Jake is a terrible driver, which is why he got rear-ended by a gentleman who did not speak English and has really crappy car insurance. The problem is Jake got pushed into a car in front of him who then proceeded to speed away from the scene. You have significant damage on your car, including your custom-made hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did the insurance company tell you today about that custom-made hood?
Yeah, they're going to replace the hood with a used OEM part, which means that it's been sitting in a warehouse somewhere that holds parts from cars that have been in worse accidents, totaled cars, essentially. And so to me, I'm just very frustrated with the whole thing because I did nothing wrong. Was not my fault. Guy clearly, you know, he's clearly at fault. No one's disputing
that. He was an older Hispanic gentleman in a work truck.
Yeah.
And you were in stop-and-go traffic in morning rush hour, and he was not paying attention. He rear-ended you. So as your penalty for being completely not at fault, you're going to get used car parts on your custom Fiat Abarth.
Yeah, and I'm pissed about it.
Yeah, and they're not going to cut. Jake has custom hood vents. What are you on the Catless one on Instagram? Mm. Just find the Catless one.
Actually, you know what? Because you gave me heartburn over it, I actually changed my name.
Stop it again?
Yeah, it's just Jake.Montemayor. Yep, I changed my name.
Why?
Just felt like it was time. It was time.
Nobody knows how to spell our last name. It should be Jake.Monty.
Okay, I'll change it to that.
Okay. Jake.
Sorry.
Dot Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, Jake.Monty. You better do it right now. Jake.Monty on Instagram. And you'll see Jake actually has a beautiful Fiat Abarth. Like, it is in Arizona. There's a huge car community there. Jake's car is one of the more respected vehicles around. He has these custom hood vents cut into his hood.
Yeah.
And they're awesome. He has a red car with white accents. It's a red hood with these white hood vents cut into it. They won't cut those hood vents.
No, they won't.
And they're going to give you and essentially what this hood is it is a hood that is in almost mint condition, which is to say it's probably been in an accident or it was not used by the factory. So they kicked it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it bothers me because, again, like you said, I'm not at fault. I did nothing wrong.
Absolutely nothing wrong. Yeah, you did nothing wrong.
Yeah. So it's just frustrating. You know, you pay insurance, and this is really what my gripe is. I pay a certain insurance company every month, almost, you know, like $180 a month or whatever it is.
You pay American Family.
Yeah, and I've got a big policy, $1,000 deductible, big time limits to cover anything because, you know, I don't want to be in a bad spot. I'm willing to pay $1,000 up front to take care of the rest. And it's frustrating that, you know, you do that. You go out and you earn your living and you pay that money to them. And when you need them, you can't just call them and be like, hey, take care of this.
Because pay for if my you parts. Do that,
yeah, my rate raise will go your up. Rate. Yeah, and I actually didn't ask them about that yet. But I have a feeling that's the way it is.
I would have called your agent right out of the gate and said, hey, look, I got in an accident. The insurance company is handling it, but they're saying they're not going to use new parts. And I've put a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of labor and love into my car. Because that's what they need to put a new hood on there. And they need to cut the hood vents in there for you.
Well, it should be said, though, the insurance company isn't the one saying that they might not be able to do it. The shop is saying that they might not be able to cut the vents into it because they can't make the hood less safe. Because in order to do the vents, you gotta cut.
You have to take out structure.
Yeah, you got to take out structure out of the hood, blah, 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 blah. So this insurance is literally, I looked into them today, they're so small, they got bought out for $1.7 million.
Yeah.
That's how small they are. They have one review on the Better Business Bureau. And so it's just tough, man. Like, you put all this time into the car, like, it's my thing. You know, it's
why I never loved Arizona, man. I'm telling you, it's not a racial thing, or they're the drivers in the class of driver there is really sketch.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder every time you get in an accident if that person's got insurance.
Yeah.
When you get in an accident, you can just almost be sure they're going to run.
Mm-hmm.
It is at that level in Arizona. I hate that.
Yeah. And I'm going to call my insurance tomorrow. I mean, I just at least need to have the conversation, because I do feel like even if I have to go out afterwards and have those vents put back in, I'm fine with that. It's not about the vents. It's about the hood. I want a new part put back on, because it should be said, they're putting a new bumper on my car on both front and back. They're going to have to do all new parts for everything else.
You had a broken tie rod.
Yeah, like there's my right headlamp was broken, like blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that happened. Yet you're skimping $150 on a hood.
That's the real ball buster.
Like,
it's $150,
man. And like, I could easily afford to pay that, but that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is I shouldn't have to.
It's $150. $150.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's so frustrating.
And the other thing that I feel like I need to say here is they're not the ones who are out the car, right? Yeah. Like they're not the ones who are out the car. I'm in the rental.
You're 24 years old, so you can't even rent a car.
Yeah, and technically I'm not supposed to be able to, but...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's the pain that you go through when you get in an accident, and it's not... Thankfully, knock on wood, thankfully you're physically fine.
Yeah,
there are no issues.
No issues.
The pain that is in your ass currently is just extraordinary.
And it's probably... It's not probably. It is more for me because, like, I'm into cars. It's what I like to do.
Yep.
Right? And as the car that I drive every day, I've done certain things to it so that the time I spend in it is fun and enjoyable.
It's just not cool.
And it's just not cool. And it's so frustrating, you know? And I don't mean to sound super negative or be, you know...
No.
Be that guy, but it's just like, man, at what point do you just say, hey, man, our guy hit you. We're going to take care of it.
Yeah,
like, that's just how it should be.
It's incredibly frustrating. Incredibly frustrating. Not as frustrating as not being able to trust your food server. So, in Detroit, in just very low-level details, guys working in a concession stand, is having a bad day, decides to spit in a pizza, serves the pizza, and immediately gets caught, gets terminated, gets arrested, and is looking at a maximum of 4 years in jail.
Oh my.
For spitting in a pizza. Is that too much?
No, it's not. It's really not, because it's not about the fact that you spit in the pizza. It's about what that danger is to other people, right? Like, we're not putting you in jail for 4 years because you physically just spit on a pizza. It's the idea that you're responsible for serving safe food and you chose not to do it. And in fact, that's even too light. I would say you went out of your way not to do it. It wasn't like it was an accident. It's not like you left a piece of chicken out too long at Chipotle.
This guy's 20 years old. He got caught on tape at Comerica Park, which is the home of the Detroit Tigers, spitting on a pizza. And the video appeared on Instagram, which made it even worse. And they were able to go back and determine that it was Friday night at Comerica Park is when that incident happened. And it's like...
What are you doing?
What are you doing, bro? I don't understand how this guy, like, what goes through your mind at that point? I've done extensive restaurant work, like everything from bartending to line cooking to, you know, serving, like everything in a restaurant, I've done it. It's never occurred to me to put something in somebody's drink or on their food, or like, it's never occurred to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's awful. I mean, to do that is just so like beneath anything that any human being should be doing. You know, yeah. Like why would you do that? And to me, it just says overall, that's just selfish. That at the end of the day, that's what it is, because you're saying, well, I just don't give an F, and so I'm just going to do this, and that's it.
He was upset because his supervisor was yelling at him, telling him he was going too slow.
So you're selfish.
So he spit on somebody's pizza. His coworker put it on Instagram. The guy who spit on the pizza got fired, and then the coworker who put it on Instagram got fired too.
Right move. Correct.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely correct.
Like, so I'm in this place right now where I'm not eating out a lot. I'm smart. Really trying, smart. Like, I am trying my best.
And I'm with you on that. I haven't eaten out in, 10 days?
I hope you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
My wife got this Instapot thing. She loves it. So she's, like, making everything in the Instapot.
And it's basically, it's just like a pressure cooker. It steams things or it uses pressure to cook stuff.
Yeah. So I bought like a huge chicken breast today that we'll make tomorrow in the Instapot. You made these amazing, but you baked those chicken drums, didn't you?
Yeah, I baked them.
Oh man, those
things.
There's,
you can't replace it.
Unbelievable. But anyway, so we're really focused on cooking at home, eating salads, I don't eat very much meat at all. I eat almost no sugar. I'm really like working on my carbohydrate intake and what time to eat what. And so I'm not eating out a lot. But one of the things that weirds me out is I don't like watching people make my food. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. And it's stories like this, I can't imagine it. If I'm going, like, if I'm at Wrigley Field, if I'm at Petco Park, wherever, I don't want to know. Just put the hot dog on the bun and just give it to me. I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's why, and we talk about this routinely with Chipotle. That's why I don't eat at Chipotle, because, and I'm not even saying that they're intentionally doing things, but all the Chipotle stories.
It's all the same, man.
Yeah, I just can't even, I can't get down with that, dude. It just absolutely freaks me out.
Yeah.
So should this guy go to jail for spitting on that pizza?
Yes.
You think he should?
Yes.
Wow. All right, that's it. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Hey, don't forget on the show tomorrow, top five, bottom five in the NFL. We'll try to get you an update on Jameis. I really hope they don't play Jameis Winston. And by the way, by this time tomorrow, the Cubs will be out of first place in the NL Central. A lot of baseball on the show tomorrow. We can also start talking NBA.
Yes.
Training camps are open, baby. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.